Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Don. This is the Maggie Don Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Is the United States at war? What constitutes war these days? What even is a declaration of war? Do any of these terms have any meaning? What happens next? So far this afternoon, though there has been a retaliatory strike by Iran against the United States' largest base in the region in Qatar, no fatalities reported, and most reporting this afternoon indicating that Iran effectively gave the United States a heads up that this was coming, which allowed interventionist measures to be deployed. In fact, the most recent reporting I heard this afternoon is that whether it was 14 or 19 missiles directed at the U.S. base in Qatar, not a single one actually hit its target. Apparently, one did fall somewhere on the, but there was nothing there. So we're very, very thankful this afternoon to be joined not only by my fabulous Monday co-host, Matt Rothschild, host of the podcast Wisconsin Forward that you can find here on the Civic Media Radio Network and wherever you find your podcasts, but also Mideast expert Elon Berwin of the American Foreign Policy Council, who joins us again here on this fine program. Matt, welcome. Elon, welcome. So much to discuss this afternoon. Let's get into where we are right now, Elon. What is the current status as you understand things? The United States engaged three specific targets in Iran over the weekend in cooperation with Israel and its military intervention and its fighting with Iran. What were those targets and why were they so important?
Right. So there were three targets, but there was one that really mattered. And this was the uranium enrichment facility in Fordo. It's in western Iran. But unlike the other facilities that were struck, those were Natanz and Isfahan, those were sites that the Israelis had already softened up, that they'd already targeted because they were above ground, they were lightly defended. Fordo was a different matter entirely. Fordo was right now, past tense, built into a mountain with uranium processes happening underground. And the worry was, among Israeli planners, was that while they were striking at, they were running a campaign to set back the Iranian nuclear program, they really didn't have the ordnance necessary to get at Fordo. And so the open question was, if the U.S. didn't get involved directly, if the U.S. Sat this one out while Israel was carrying out its campaign, how much could Israel actually set back the Iranian nuclear program if this facility was left intact? And the president, gave his famous, 2 week sort of general 2 week time frame, which he says sort of for everything.
Yes.
He'll make a decision within 2 weeks, but very quickly seemed to come to the conclusion that the only way out is through, right? That neither the U.S. nor Israel nor Middle East security generally benefits from a job that's half done. And so he decided to attack Fordo, to launch to use the GBUs, the massive ordnance penetrators that we have in our arsenal, the Israelis don't have in theirs, as a way of amplifying what the Israelis had already done. The most important context, though, I think, for all of this is the president did this and the ancillary strikes on Natanz and Fordo and Isfahan for good measure, really as an element of coercive diplomacy, as in this wasn't an attack to change the Iranian regime. This was very clearly, at least in my mind, very clearly an effort to reset the negotiation process, which had become stalled. And you saw the messaging coming out of the White House. You saw what he was tweeting in regular language and in all caps. He was saying, we've done this, now come back to the table. And by the way, that's exactly what he's tweeted now. The Iranians, when they were contemplating their options, they really didn't have very many good ones in terms of responses because they could do nothing and they would be seen as provocatively weak by their internal opposition, or they could do something and if they miscalculated, they could create a catastrophic response from the United States. So what ended up happening was precisely what we saw earlier today, was a punch that was telegraphed well in advance so as to minimize any casualty or any destruction of the Al Udeid airbase at all, right? This is, I see this as a safe face-saving measure on the part of the Iranians. It's not clear to me that they're ready to come back to the negotiating table, but it is clear to me that that's what the administration hopes.
Go ahead, Matt.
You talked about coercive diplomacy and Trump's tweets today, but how do you make sense of his tweet about regime change?
So I think it's all part and parcel. Look, the president campaigned successfully on this idea that he would end wars, right? He has no appetite for regime change. He does not want a nation build. It's very clear, sort of from my conversations with folks in the administration, this is just not on the agenda. What he does want is he wants an agreement that codifies the status quo as he sees it, that it has to be, right? Which is that the Iranian nuclear program is, if not fully dismantled, is in the process of being dismantled in a verifiable fashion, right? And how my sense is, however we get there is how he wants to get there. And I saw that as a I saw that tweet about, you know, make Iran great again. If this regime can't do a deal, then we need one that can, as a sort of signal to the Iranian regime that there is a possibility for escalation on the American side, that this his patience is not infinite. And, you know, there are consequences to continued intransigence. And by the way, at least in the context of Iran, this is actually a very useful messaging strategy, because the Iranian negotiating strategy all along has been to run out the clock. They did it successfully for a decade with the Europeans and then with the Obama administration. They ended up coming up with a deal that, you know, according to many, myself included, was overly generous in terms of sanctions relief. It was too limited, didn't cover enough stuff. And so the Iranians have sort of become conditioned to think that, oh, if we just keep talking, then the Americans won't do anything, right? We can only do one thing at a time. So what happened over the weekend, I think, really jolted them awake. And now Trump has signaled that, you know, the Iranian response was, you know, just a face-saving measure. He's willing to move on. The question really is, the ball is back in the Iranian court. You know, are they willing to move on?
Here's my question. I can take at face value the assertion, of course, that Iran is an overarching destabilizing actor in the Mideast, not a good faith actor. I can, of course, I think the historical record about Iran's, what I'm going to just call bad faith, foot dragging, et cetera, but pretty robust historical record there. The intervention by the United States, and we'll get into the legal authorities to launch this sort of military attack against a nation state versus a non-state actor and how that's become muddied post 9/11 largely. Yeah, sure. But my question is this, it seems to me that the question of the day, and one that Donald Trump is not really interested in engaging any dialogue about, is whether or not the attack by the United States, the use of these massive ordnance, penetrator bombs, actually took out Fordo, right? We've seen some footage. We've seen destruction. But the question is, did it actually completely obliterate that? Again, the president's word, obliterate, I believe, totally obliterated. What I understand from listening to a lot of military commanders is that prudence is what is most appropriate following this sort of attack until you have verifiable intelligence. Complicating matters further, as I have heard accounts that, again, there were forewarnings of a potential attack, that Iran took measures to move enriched uranium, not quite yet at weapons grade, but near weapons grade, that it could be moved, that it was moved. So the baseline question, Elon, is the president right when he claims that Iran's nuclear sites were, quote, totally obliterated? Or do we really need, and again, Secretary Hegseth, Secretary of State Rubio, much more muted. And in fact, one of the generals said, we have to actually investigate that claim. Does all of this, again, how do we assess that? What is the prudent course when it comes to claims of total obliteration of their nuclear, those particular nuclear sites, including Fordo, the most important of those?
Well, look, so I think there's two things here, right? So we all have the sort of the lived experience that Donald Trump is given to hyperbole and he's given to exaggerating. But we don't, my rule of thumb is you don't take him literally, but you take him seriously, right? And I tend to think that that's right, that time will determine, right? There will be people who will be examining, what happened to the enriched uranium, right? There's things like radiation footprints and things like that you can track by satellite, right? It takes time, but I tend to think that the Iranian claims that, this was just minor damage, we moved everything beforehand, is simply for their own domestic consumption. Because if you look at what the Israelis were doing in the days ahead of the American strike, their intelligence was so good that they were killing Iranian nuclear scientists by missile strike in their own bedrooms. So the idea that the Israelis could do that, but they couldn't track hundreds of kilograms of enriched material traveling outside of sensitive sites that they have surveillance over, I simply don't believe it, right? That said, I don't know. I mean, my sense is that a lot has been accomplished, and maybe enough has been accomplished that the president is comfortable saying, you know what, even though we know that it's not fully obliterated, enough damage has been done. Maybe there's a little face saving that needs to be done on the part of the Iranians as well. Maybe let them take the sort of the hyperbole, let them take the quiet win and sort of move on, right? Because after all, he is trying to set the negotiating table again.
I think one of the quotes that I read over the weekend was from Rafael Mariano Grossi, of course, the director general of the International Atomic Energy Agency, saying on CNN Sunday that, quote, Iran has made no secret that they have protected this material. I've also heard that there are some, a mild way to put this, places of departure between American and Israeli intelligence when it comes to these matters. When we're talking about military operations, especially the targeting, the specific targeting of nuclear sites, specificity and the actual facts deeply matter, as does the accuracy and reliability of the intelligence gathering here. Can you speak a bit to this distinction? The New York Times reporting, amongst other outlets, that American officials have said that while Israel's intelligence agency believes that Iran can achieve a nuclear weapon in 15 days, the American intelligence apparatus believes that it could take several months and up to a year for Iran to make a weapon, begging the question about the legal authority for the president's attack. We're going to discuss the differences between American and Israeli intelligence, what that means for these sorts of attacks, and the question of the legality of the president's decision to bomb Iran. We continue with our expert, Ilan Berman of the American Foreign Policy Council, and my excellent co-host this afternoon, Matt Rothschild. Keep it locked. The big discussions of the big issues continue on the Civic Media Radio Network.